From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
2 weeks after the liberation of the Al-Shar neighborhood in eastern Aleppo by Syria's army, life has been gradually returning to a post-apocalyptic normal. Most of the locals are returning, breathing life into the city's devastated streets as heavy machinery works to clear the rubble. RT's Lizzie Phelan was in Aleppo and filed this report.
This is the first time I've been able to come to Aleppo's famous old city without wearing full protective gear or hearing the sounds of fighting and missiles landing nearby. It's also the first time in more than 4 years that members of the public have been able to stroll around this area, because up until just over a week ago, this UNESCO World Heritage Site was divided between pro and anti-government forces. But before the war, this was a famous tourist attraction, bustling with people who would come to see the sights here, not least one of the world's most famous citadels. Now people are returning here again to see what's left of these sites, and those who had shops and homes here are coming to check what's left of them.
Wading through the rubble of this former battlefield, Aleppo's residents stop to take selfies amongst the new ruins and the old ones. Some, like Muna, remained in the old city, but rarely dared to venture out. She lit up when we asked her what it's like to see all these people walking around now.
Yesterday, I was so excited and happy because at last I could go along the road to the castle. I brought some bread for my daughters and came back home safely. We are struggling now with water, and there is no electricity. I'm transporting some water in this cart. What can we do?
Her bittersweet feeling is shared by Marwan, who fled to the other side of the front line when the rebels arrived in 2012.
We always kept this view in our mind. We just couldn't forget it, how beautiful Aleppo is. This view used to be in front of us every single day. I own this shop. I had some staff. We sold hookahs, coffee, tea, fresh juice, and some snacks. We lived in this store. It's a piece of our lives. What I'm seeing now is very painful. God willing, we will get back everything that we had.
Walking through the old city, and we noticed how beautiful this store is. It has this little knocker. We didn't expect anybody to be in, but we knocked the door and this lady was in her house. And she's just come back. She hasn't been living here for the last 4 or 5 years.
I was born here in the 60s. I came here just to relieve some memories.
That was RT's Lizzie Phelan reporting from East Aleppo.
The result of the voting is as follows. The draft resolution received 15 votes in favor. The draft resolution has been adopted unanimously as resolution 2330 of 2016.
That was the sound in New York Monday at the United Nations Security Council as it unanimously adopted a resolution requesting the UN and other relevant institutions to monitor and observe evacuations from the eastern districts of Aleppo and elsewhere in that city in Syria. Andita Listrarini filed this report from the United Nations.
The resolution stresses that evacuations of the thousands who remain inside East Aleppo must be conducted in accordance with international law, and emphasizes that they must be voluntary and to the final destination of their choice for civilians fleeing the shattered city. It asks the UN and others to monitor the evacuations and requests the UN chief to take urgent steps to make arrangements for the security of observers as soon as possible. The United States Ambassador Samantha Power told reporters at UN headquarters in New York that she hoped the resolution would deter armed groups from preying on civilians as they left the city.
It is our job as a UN community to ensure that those monitors get deployed urgently and that the risks that families who have lost literally everything, the risks that they undertake en route out of the besieged last part of eastern Aleppo is mitigated by a deterrent presence.
Syria's ambassador to the UN told reporters that the resolution was designed to protect terrorists, not the Syrian people. He claimed that terrorist fighters would be taking advantage of the evacuation to leave safely. A Security Council resolution earlier in the month, which would have mandated a 7-day ceasefire in Aleppo, was vetoed by permanent members Russia and China. Andita Listerini, United Nations.
We'll hear directly from Syria's permanent representative to the UN, Bashar Ja'afari, about the situation in his country later in this newscast. Meanwhile, there was a terrorist attack involving the ongoing attempts to resolve the war in Syria, but that attack took place in Turkey's capital, Ankara, with the killing of Russia's ambassador to that country by a gunman who said it was in retribution for Russia's role in that war. A spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, said Russia's ambassador to Turkey, Andrei Karlov, died after being shot during a public event in the Turkish capital. The shooter was captured on videotape, which was released almost immediately after the incident. Russia's President Vladimir Putin addressed the assassination in a press conference late Monday.
Karlov was murdered. I would like to give my sincere condolences to the family and friends of our comrade. I would like to request the Russian Foreign Ministry to award Mr. Karlov post-mortem and offer its proposals for making a memorial for him. He was killed while performing his duties. This was a brilliant diplomat who was widely respected in the country where he was posted. He was in good standing with the government of Turkey and with other political groups in that country. He was respected. Ambassador Karlov was a very good-hearted person. I knew him personally, so I'm not speaking from hearsay. And last autumn, during my visit to Turkey, Ambassador Karlov accompanied me all the time. This murder is clearly a provocation aimed at undermining the improvement and the normalization of the Russian-Turkish relations, as well as at undermining the peace process in Syria promoted by Russia, Turkey, Iran, and other countries interested in settling this conflict in Syria. The only response we should offer to this murder is stepping up our fight against terror, and the criminals will feel the heat. The Russian Investigative Committee has already launched an investigation into this killing. It's been tasked with forming a working group, which will have to fly to Ankara and join its Turkish colleagues in jointly investigating this murder. This is something we agreed on in my telephone conversation with the Turkish president just now. We have to know who organized the killing, who gave orders to the assassin. We need to strengthen security at Russian diplomatic missions Turkey's diplomatic missions in Russia. We also need to receive guarantees from Turkey that Russian diplomatic missions in Turkey will also enjoy strengthened security in compliance with the Convention on Diplomatic Relations. And I would like to request you to offer your proposals for strengthening the security of Russian diplomatic missions abroad.
Meanwhile, here in the U.S., the Electoral College met across the U.S. in the 50 state capitals and District of Columbia.
Resolve that the electors of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania here assemble in the chamber of the House of Representatives at the state capitol in the city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution and the laws of the United States and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, do now proceed to ballot for the Vice President of the United States.
That was the sound from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump, as expected, won all 20
of the state's presidential electors.
The chair directs the secretary to record that in the open meeting of this electoral college of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the Honorable David Urban certified on behalf of the tellers Megan Sweeney, Betsy Hauer, Charles Giroux, and George Yalkovich that the vote for President of the United States was 20 votes for Donald J. Trump, and the vote for Vice President for the United States, 20 votes for Michael R. Pence.
That despite a full court press by organizations such as MoveOn.org to compel electors to switch their votes and nullify the results of last month's election. There were some protesters within earshot of the assembled delegates who made their presence known as the vote was declared. Pennsylvania was one of three states where Green Party candidate Jill Stein filed for recounts, which potentially could have swung the election towards Clinton. However, in Wisconsin, the only state which actually conducted a recount, the result was a small additional vote in Trump's favor. The third state targeted by Stein was Michigan, which on Monday awarded its 16 delegates to Trump.
Donald J. Trump received 16 electoral votes from the state of Michigan.
We'll discuss the Electoral College vote with our regular political commentator, Professor Tony Montero, in tomorrow's newscast. On Monday, the UN Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution requesting the UN and other relevant institutions to monitor the situation on the ground in Aleppo. Immediately following the session, Syria's permanent representative to the UN, Bashar Ja'afari, held a press conference outside the council's chamber where he discussed the situation in his country.
I would like to make the following statement after the adoption by the Security Council of the Resolution 2328. France and Britain's insistence on presenting and adopting such resolution is just another part of the continued propaganda against Syria and its fight against terrorism. While we respect the Security Council resolutions, we are aware of the real purpose of their efforts, which is to protect the terrorists. And I will explain why later on. Not the Syrian people. Especially after the image become clear and Aleppo has been liberated from terrorist groups. I would like to share with you that right now, the last terrorists in some districts of the eastern part of Aleppo are evacuating their strongholds. And Aleppo this evening will be clean. The Syrian government does not oppose the adoption of any resolution that respects the international humanitarian law and the protection of civilians, or intends to provide civilians with medical and food assistance, or to protect medical and educational facilities. We are saying that because the Syrian government till now is presenting up to 80% of the humanitarian assistance provided to all our people all over Syria, but in particular to the civilians who are still, I mean, hopefully this evening there will be no more civilians, but who are still in some districts of the eastern part of Aleppo. The UN is not doing its job correctly. To be factual, these principles are at the core duties of the Syrian government towards its citizens. And it has been doing this over the last 5 years. We oppose the attempts of some member states to draft and submit under a humanitarian cover a crafty and vague terms and loose phrases that tolerate more than one interpretation with the intention of exploiting these resolutions to achieve hidden agendas, to legitimize foreign interference, changing of legitimate governments by force, or even using military force. These kind of resolutions might have a lot of purposes, but the stated humanitarian goal. We all have in mind what they did to Iraq and Libya and elsewhere. under the cover of humanitarian purposes. In Libya, they wanted to protect the civilians. They destroyed the whole country and transformed Libya into an international hub of terrorism. Iraq, needless to talk about it. The Syrian government, as part of its humanitarian response, has received more than 100,000 civilians who came out of the eastern district of Aleppo through the period from 26 November until the 14th of December. Moreover, the government has provided all the services, needs, and medical care for those civilians. It is necessary to point out that the Syrian government has provided 80%, as I said, of the food and emergency assistance to those families, while the United Nations organizations have only provided 20%, roughly 20%. The Syrian government demands in this regard that the UN aid organizations do their part in helping the Syrian residents of Aleppo, helping in deeds, not in words. The Syrian government has agreed to evacuate the unlawful armed groups and their families from Aleppo. Many people today of the so-called families of the terrorists left the buses transporting them to outside of Aleppo and joined the government's, the Syrian Arab Republic Army and the government's areas under the control of the government. Many of their own families decided to leave the buses and they left, and we have the images and the films and the YouTubes and the WhatsApp and whatever, which proves and corroborates what we are talking about. This is very indicative, ladies and gentlemen. However, the armed terrorist groups repeatedly breached the terms of this agreement, like trying to take a number of prisoners and bodies of martyrs with them, or to carry their medium weapons. According to the agreement with them, the terrorists should have left their strongholds carrying with them their light weapons only, and not taking with them any hostages, any bodies of martyrs. They did not respect these terms of the agreement, and they carried on with them their medium-range weapons and many of the kidnapped and abducted Syrian soldiers and civilians with them, as well as the bodies of too many martyrs. This is the reason why the whole operation got stopped yesterday. Despite of all of this, the Syrian government is still ready to evacuate remaining unlawful armed groups in the terrorist pockets in the eastern part of Aleppo. And it has organized yesterday a convoy to evacuate 3,750 terrorists and their families. Unfortunately, some member states in the Security Council and the mainstream media continue to defend and support the genetically modified armed Syrian opposition, moderate by definition, while turning a blind eye to the crimes committed by them, such as burning the evacuation buses yesterday. I guess you are aware of this. The media told you that the terrorists burned only 5 buses. No, this is not correct. They burned 25 buses and took their drivers hostages, and they killed 3 drivers out of them. And using a 7-year-old girl as a suicide bomber. 7-year-old girl as a suicide bomber at a Damascus police station 2 days ago. I guess you are aware of that too. Instead, France and some other member states and the council did not say a single word of condemnation of these terrorists attacks against the evacuation buses that were sent to evacuate the sick and wounded from Kafraya and Al Fua. They didn't even say one single word on this little girl, 7 years old, who was sent as a suicide bomber through remote control from outside the precinct, the police precinct. These people inside didn't find enough time for them to issue a condemnation. Despite our belief that some member states within the Council seek to rescue their spoiled moderate terrorists from facing their fate, we are dealing with the adoption of this resolution as a legal and moral test for these countries, as a chance, if you want, for them to prove their good intentions, if they do have any, and their real interest to meet the humanitarian needs of the Syrian people without any hidden, hostile, and intrusive agenda towards the government and the people of Syria. I would like finally to share with you this information. The Syrian competent authorities have gathered information saying that many foreign officers, intelligence and military officers, who are in the eastern part of Aleppo with the terrorist groups, are trying to exit their strongholds in the eastern part of Aleppo. I will say before you their names and their nationalities. Mu'taz Oglakan Uglu, Turkish. David Scott Winner, American. David Shlomo Aram, Israeli. Muhammad Sheikh al-Islam al-Tamimi, Qatari. Muhammad Ahmed al-Sabyan, Saudi. Abdul Mun'im Fahd al-Hrej, Saudi. Ahmed bin Nouf al-Dreij, Saudi. Muhammad Hassan al-Subay'i, Saudi. Qasim Sa'd al-Shumari, Saudi. Ayman Qasim al-Tha'albi, Saudi. Amjad Qasim al-Tirawi, Jordanian. Muhammad al-Shafi'i al-Idrisi, Moroccan. These Syrian moderate opposition individuals who have foreign citizenship and nationalities are trying to escape from the eastern part of Aleppo with the terrorists. And this is why, you saw this hysterical move in the Council for the last 3 days. Because the main purpose is how to rescue these terrorist foreigners, intelligence officers, from the same countries who pushed for the adoption of the resolution out of Aleppo.
Mr. Ambassador, the UN ambassador says at the highest level, the UN says, Mr. Ambassador, that your government does not allow humanitarian aid delivery into Syria, and then you're saying that the UN is not doing its part to deliver this humanitarian aid. Just two quick questions, Mr. Ambassador. One, are you going to implement this resolution in Syria in full? And two, are you going to let the UN humanitarian aid delivery into Aleppo and other parts of Syria? Thank you.
The provision of the resolution that we have just adopted in the Council has been implemented by the Syrian government for 5 years. So this is not something new for us. On the contrary, we are welcoming the good intentions, if there are any, behind the adoption of this resolution, meaning that we would like to see genuine partners with us to implement the provision of this resolution, because it has always been a one-way ticket while implementing the humanitarian assistance in Syria. It has always been the Syrian government who provides 80% up to the from the overall assessment of the needs. So it is time for those who pretend they have good intentions towards the Syrian people to share with us, with the Syrian government, these burdens, humanitarian burdens. So we are not that sad with this resolution, because it is part of our continued daily efforts.
Ambassador, I want to ask more specific question. And can you tell us, in the next 24 hours, will your government allow the UN observers to enter eastern Aleppo? And can you, does your government guarantee the safety of UN observers when they enter Aleppo?
Hold on. You are reading the map wrongly, my friend. You are reading the map. you are reading the map wrongly and you didn't read the resolution, or you are not following the events correctly. Are we going to implement the resolution?
Yes.
This is your question?
Are you letting the observers in?
Good, excellent. We are talking about observers who are still there on the spot. We are not talking about observers who will come from Mars or from Jupiter. The resolution talks about observers who are there. ICRC, Syrian Arab Red Crescent, OCHA, United Nations, all of them are there. Nobody else will come from outside of these people who are still there. So we are not talking about forming or establishing a new force coming from outside to replace those who are on the spot. The resolution speaks about the UN as well as RCRC and the Syrian Red Arab Crescent Association to supervise and monitor the implementation of the resolution. So they are there. They have been implementing the provision of the resolution for years.
Does your government guarantee their safety?
We have guaranteed the safety of the UN staffers for 6 years. 6 years, and none of the UN staffers got killed or wounded or abducted, just for your kind information. And we paid costly for that, because too many of our officers, our humanitarian workers, and our officers got killed because of that.
What's the status of civilians in Fua and Kafraya, and who, according to your government, was responsible for the burning of the buses? Which groups?
The group who burnt the buses is called Saraya al-Tawheed. Saraya al-Tawheed, which is part of Al-Qaeda and Jaish al-Fatah, affiliated to the Turkish intelligence.
Did anyone get out of the two? I mean, what's the status of people in Fua and Kafraya?
They killed three drivers, abducted the remaining 22 other drivers, burnt 25 buses, prevented, of course, the evacuation of the wounded people from Kafraya and Al-Fua. But today, we have succeeded evacuating hundreds of these wounded people from Kafraya and Al-Fua.
Mr. Ambassador,
mention these names and their nationalities. What are you planning to do with them? Are you going to let them go out? Are you going to arrest them? Because you have all the information, obviously, and you control the area on the ground. So what are
we are going to catch them, my friend, and show them to you.
You mean only them or them and other fighters?
Them? No, I'm talking about the foreigners, intelligence officers, whose name I have mentioned a few minutes ago. You wanted to see them? We will show them to you.
Mr. Ambassador, a lot of buses that were supposedly burned in Eastern Aleppo were
It's burned. Not supposedly. Haven't you seen the pictures?
No, I'm saying because they were not burned by the people you claim were burned by. People say that they were burned by
forget about people.
Like
forget
Hezbollah,
about the people.
Like
I have the film
we
of the burning of the buses with the slogans of the leader who burned the buses, claiming Allahu Akbar and identifying himself. We have the statement who issued. Come on, my friend. Come on. Give me a break. Give me a break, please.
Mr. Ambassador, you named off a whole list of individuals who you claim are
nice people. Yeah,
are intelligence agents from countries.
No, they are Syrian moderate opposition.
Right. Can
genetically
you tell,
modified?
Are they still in Eastern Aleppo?
Yes.
They are still there.
Yes. And this is why you saw this hysterical move during the weekend by France and Britain and the Americans, because they wanted to guarantee their safety out of the eastern part of Aleppo.
Mr. Ambassador, how have you been able to name them as you do now?
We don't have strong intelligence services. Thank you so much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.